BBC Radio 4.
On Longwave and DAB Digital Radio now, it's time for the Daily Service, led by the Reverend Claire Jaques. This is BBC Radio 4 FM, where now we continue our Book of the Week, James Booth's new biography, Philip Larkin, Life, Art and Love. After a spell as a librarian in the Shropshire town of Wellington, Larkin has secured the post of librarian at University College Leicester. Now aged 23, he's already a published poet and aspiring novelist. The reader is Michael Pennington.
Shortly after his arrival in Leicester in 1945, Larkin met Monica Jones, an assistant lecturer in the English department. Within weeks of their meeting, he had lent her the proofs of his novels, and very soon he was developing a protective loyalty towards her, intensified by the unremitting hostility of his close friend Kingsley Amis, who was jealous of this new rival. Amis had visited Larkin shortly after he'd taken up his post in Leicester, and inspired by a glimpse of the common room, had begun drafting the novel which eventually became Lucky Jim, in which Monica Jones features as the neurotic, manipulative Margaret Peel. Amis took every opportunity to ridicule his rival for Larkin's affections. Early in 1947, Larkin had been feeling particularly affectionate towards his parents. In May, he complimented them on how young they still seemed. Young, in keen response to things, makes home a very nice place to come to. But at Christmas, Sidney Larkin became ill. An operation for gallstones in the new year failed to dispel the problem. In February, he wrote to Jim Sutton that it was all up with his father. Matter of weeks. I feel that I've got to make a big mental jump, to stop being a child and become an adult. On the 4th of April, Larkin wrote to Monica Jones, thoughtfully hoping that she had managed to recuperate from the strain of teaching, before going on to relate his own news. My holiday was rather as I expected. My poor father grew steadily worse and died on Good Friday. Since then, Mother and I have been rather hopelessly looking at the stock in the house. This morning I shifted 100 pounds of jam. 1945, 1946 and 1947 years, and about 25 kilner jars of bottled fruit. I don't know what will happen to it all. I don't like sweet things, you remember. The only poem Larkin had completed during the last 16 months was Waiting for Breakfast the previous December. Now he composed what was to remain his only morning elegy, An April Sunday Brings the Snow. He told Monica, "It is snowing here at the moment. This accords very well with mood and circumstance, both of which are hardy-ish." Larkin was aware that this was one of his finest poems. It is an indication of the intensity of his personal grief that he did not publish it during his lifetime. His mother, Eva, was disorientated by widowhood, so he submitted to the ordeal of buying a house in Leicester where they could live together. The 2 years which followed were among the most miserable of his life. He was more certain than ever that what he, Larkin, wanted was not marriage. Women don't just sit still and back you up. They want children. They like scenes. They want a chance of parading all the emotional haberdashery they're stocked with. Above all, they like feeling they own you, or that you own them. A thing I hate. In March 1950, he visited Kingsley Amis and his wife Hilly in Swansea, where Kingsley was now a lecturer, and found this glimpse of married life decidedly uninviting. He began to lay practical plans to escape from his mother. "I do realise that my mother must live with someone, only I'd rather prefer it not to be me." In late May, he applied for a sub-librarianship at Queen's University Belfast, and somewhat to his surprise, was appointed. Only now, following a final break with Ruth Bowman, his girlfriend from Shropshire, did he begin a physical relationship with Monica Jones. He felt he could take the risk, since he would be in Belfast and Monica in Leicester, so their relationship would necessarily assume what was for him the ideal form, a written correspondence. The task of disentangling himself from his mother was stressful. Eva moved in with her daughter Kitty in Loughborough, though in her own mind at least, this was only until she could join her son in Belfast. Shortly after his arrival, Larkin's eye was caught by Winifred Arnott, a 21-year-old library assistant. Their relationship was never to develop beyond a romantic friendship, but for this very reason, this is one of the most poetically productive of all his liaisons. Winifred said, "He was a working colleague, 7 years older than me, already balding. They would meet over coffee, and at the weekend she would join him on long bicycle rides in the countryside. The decisive factor for her was his negative attitude towards marriage. I never did regard him as a candidate for my husband and the father of my children." The development of their relationship was suspended when Winifred left for London in August 1951. Within the closed academic world of the university, Larkin was becoming comfortably settled. In a letter to Monica, he accepted her envious perception of his effortless popularity and listed his cynical strategies for being liked. Never contradict. Be pliable. Be funny. By all accounts, he was a witty and entertaining companion, imitating the Belfast accent perfectly and always ready with amusing anecdotes. Larkin's relationship with Monica was becoming more intimate and familiar. From May 1951 onwards, imagery of rabbits becomes a recurrent feature of their correspondence. Letters begin, "forepaws, ears, or bun, bunny rabbit," in reference to their shared delight in the stories of Beatrix Potter. He adorns his letters with charming sketches of a rabbit in a skirt. The pattern of Larkin and Monica's future relationship was beginning to establish itself. He saw her regularly in Leicester whenever he visited his mother in nearby Loughborough, and they took holidays together, though never beyond the British Isles nor in company with anybody else. A number of her students recall Monica as a lively, inspirational lecturer. But edgy, defensive, loud, and with little interest in other people, Monica was not an easy companion. Though Larkin was the least political of men, her rigid right-wing opinions occasionally caused friction. His deepest instinct was to avoid politics, while his shallower instincts, contrary to popular opinion, gave him, at least in his earlier years, a prejudice for the left. After a holiday in the Lake District in 1952, during which they visited Beatrix Potter's house, Larkin allowed himself to express something of the exasperation she caused him. "In my view, you would do much better to revise drastically the amount you say and the intensity with which you say it. You say you chatter like a jay. I don't say that exactly. What I do feel is that you've no idea of the exhausting quality of yourself in full voice. I feel quite unable to answer. I want to go and be quiet somewhere." Despite the dissatisfactions, Larkin remained loyal, and as time passed, his developing routines with Monica assumed the aspect of a marriage in every sense except day-to-day cohabitation. His domestic bachelor routines were established, and in the letters to Monica, he describes the prospect of tidying his own room with some relish. Larkin's friendship with Winifred Arnott had been resumed following her return from London in September 1952. But the next year she came home from a holiday with the news that she was engaged to be married. To his mother, Larkin depicts his feelings as those of a disappointed suitor. "I am feeling a bit balked concerning her. My paw was raised to be brought down on her, and now she scuttles away into the shadow of a rock. Bah!" After his departure from Leicester for Belfast in 1950, Larkin had developed the habit of corresponding with his mother at least twice a week. He addressed her as "Dearest Mop," "Dearest Old Creature," or "My Very Dear Old Creature." She called him "My Dear Creature," or "My Very Dear Creature." On Sundays, he made sure to fill at least 4 pages with trivial comments, advice, and delicate caricatures of mother or son. When either of them missed a letter, an apology would follow. This is by far his most consistent and extensive correspondence, running to about 4,000 letters and cards by the time of Eva's death in 1977. It was during his time in Belfast that Larkin finally abandoned any ambition to be a novelist. When Kingsley Amis began writing his first novel, Lucky Jim, the protagonist was based on Larkin, who had been reading drafts of the novel since its inception. When it was first rejected, he helped Amis with the redrafting. "We should be able to fudge up something good between us," Amis wrote anxiously. Both Amis and Larkin were caught by surprise when Lucky Jim was accepted by Gollancz. Larkin's importunate friend had suddenly overtaken him. But despite an occasional snide comment, Larkin was not embittered. He was well aware that Amis could not have written Lucky Jim without his help and support. He wrote to Monica in September 1953 with characteristic generosity. "I don't think anything can stop it being a howling success. It seems to me so entirely original that my own suggestions really pass unnoticed. Even if he never writes anything else, it will remain as a landmark." In 1953, some of Larkin's poems appeared in The Spectator and also began to be heard on the radio. One of the journals in which his work appeared was Listen, a small magazine founded in Hull by George and Jean Hartley. The Hartleys immediately fell in love with his work. Jean Hartley recalls their excitement at the poem's rare combination of wit, lyricism, and disenchantment. On the 20th of December 1954, George Hartley wrote from Hull that they had decided to venture on a book and asked him to be their first author. Larkin agreed. By now, he was beginning to feel that his sojourn in Ireland had run its course. In his next completed poem, Places, Loved Ones, the speaker meditates on rootlessness. "No, I have never found the place where I could say, this is my proper ground, here I shall stay." A few weeks earlier, the librarian at Queen's, feeling Larkin's abilities needed a new challenge, had encouraged him to apply for a post at Hull. In September 1954, Hull gained full university status, and in November, Larkin wrote to Monica to say that he had been offered the post. He was to start in March. A few days later, he reviewed his situation. He was now definitely committed to a career in librarianship. Monica, meanwhile, was doing her best to persuade him to marry her by the well-calculated strategy of sympathizing with his views about marriage. She conceded, "Well, for one thing, you can't marry just because you think it's a sort of moral duty." On the other hand, she suggested, reasonably, "One thing that does make me feel that we are suited is that you could discuss such an idea with me and that I can hear it without the least offence, and even with understanding. But being suited and actually wanting to marry is another thing again, too." It is painful to read her careful angling. Larkin responded after a week, tantalizing her with arguments in favour of commitment. "It seemed to me that if we were going to get married, this would be a good point to do so. We both want, or think we want, the same kind of life. We know each other well enough, etc. And we are aging." But he continued with a cruel candour, which must have put Monica through the emotional mangle. "I dare say I could go through with it, but..." He concluded with a crushing Larkin-esque aphorism. "What frightens me most about marriage is the passing a law never to be alone again side of it." Monica could be in no doubt where she stood.
Michael Pennington was reading from Philip Larkin, Life, Art and Love by James Booth. It's abridged by Libby Spurrier, produced by Joanna Green, and it's a peer production for BBC Radio 4. Lending money to relatives is at an all-time high, so what does that mean for families? Now that's the question in Call You and Yours today. If you've thoughts on lending to loved ones, you can call the programme on 03700 100 444. Call You and Yours is at midday. Now, just before the news, a word from Tom Heap.
More of us now buy cars with diesel engines rather than petrol. They use less fuel and cut the carbon dioxide blamed for climate change. So friendly to our pocket and the environment. But could we be paying with shorter lives? Increasing research suggests gases and particles from diesel exhaust are damaging children's lungs and triggering strokes and heart attacks. So is diesel a friend or foe on our city streets? And what can we do to keep our families safe from air pollution? That's Costing the Earth with me, Tom Heap, this afternoon at 3:30.